2015 Pacific Northwest Photography Viewing Drawers, which features 10 photos each by 62 photographers from around the Northwest.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week is Zemi Barr. She's the exhibitions manager at Blue Sky Gallery, the Oregon Center for the Photographic Arts. And she's talking about the 2015 Pacific Northwest Photography Viewing Drawers. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Zemi.
Thanks for having me.
This show, you do it once a year, and it's a juried show, and all the pictures, all the photographs are in drawers. So these are the drawers you see as you go in, and they're in the sort of second room on the left.
Yeah, that's correct. They are right past the library. The work that's in the drawers, every artist has 10 prints that are on view, and then viewers can come look at them and peruse as many as they want for as long as they want while we're open. We have two jurors each year that we select to independently take a look at all of the submissions we receive. It's free to submit, so it's a really great way to get your work shown in Portland with very minimal cost. Our jurors this year are Shane Lavalette. He is the director of Lightwork in Syracuse, New York. And then our other juror is Prudence Roberts, and she is an independent curator and writer here in Portland. She also teaches art history at Portland Community College. Mm-hmm.
So they're not Blue Sky insiders. They're seeing these submissions that come online from all over the world, really, well, mainly all over the U.S. And they make their decision, and then you arrange to have prints sent. The 10 that you choose are stored in these drawers.
Yes. And actually, we do sometimes receive submissions from all over the country and the world, but we limit who is selected to people in the Pacific Northwest, which in this case we define as British Columbia, Alaska, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana.
Right. So if you want to go see these pictures, you really got to dig into these drawers. They're these big flat drawers. They're kind of stiff. They're quite hard to open. And they're kind of arranged at random, right?
Well, they're arranged alphabetically, but yeah, that's a fairly random way to do it. So people who share a drawer, there are two people per drawer. Every week we switch out a few pieces by each artist to showcase on these easels that are on top of the drawers. Mm-hmm. So you get a glimpse of what's inside. But yes, it does take a bit of rooting around. We do have an exhibition committee member who, every time we have new drawers come through each April, he comes and spends like multiple days going through all of them. And I think it would take a couple visits to really get a chance to look at everything thoroughly.
So we opened it at C, and there's a woman called Haley Cothran. She's in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, she's a student at the Rochester Institute of Technology,
but she's from around here.
Yeah, she's from Salem. So I was really impressed with her work, especially, you know, she made it after her freshman year in college. So it was really refreshing to see some new work, a new voice.
These are diptychs, so two pictures per matting. They're a sort of compare and contrast. There's a piece of her body, like an arm or a leg or something, And then the other one is usually something inanimate, like telegraph wires, things like that.
Yeah, she's using what I am interpreting as self-portraiture because it is about her own experience. And she's juxtaposing that with images of the landscape around her in Rochester. So trying to find herself in her surroundings and find a feeling of home and security there. It's actually a very beautiful way that she's paired some of... There's one that's a horizon line of a field and then the line or juxtaposed with the line of her shoulder. It's just, to me, like a very sophisticated pairing. It was unexpected from student work that
And a road that's sort of curving away and there's another limb next to it, things like that.
Yeah. So two organic forms, but that you might not put together. So yeah, I was really impressed with that
and
work.
And it stood out for the execution as well, right? It's well printed or composed?
Yeah, very well printed. And I think sometimes with student work, there's a tendency to try to do too much with one project. And this was very straightforward, but very poignant.
A young lad called Marcus Shearer has done a photo essay of our old friend Walt Curtis, a longtime Portland resident and poet. And so what did Marcus do?
This is a photo essay following Walt through, you know, everyday activities, hanging out with friends, writing. Although there is one image that is meant to be the closing image of the series that I think is just fantastic of Walt in a field with the mountains behind it. It looks like it might be Mount Hood. There's just this beautiful use of light that's against the silhouette of Walt's figure. And it's just sort of a inspiring photo, like Walt going forward. He's still going.
He's in silhouette. You can see some detail of his body, but then his hair is caught by the sun from behind and it's like a halo.
Right.
And he's in the very center, I think, of the picture. It's quite beautifully captured, right? He was just walking towards the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can tell Marcus has a close relationship with Walt and there is some, you know, a sense of revering Walt in a way, but it is also an honest portrait, I think, too.
But you also get to see pictures of other people, like Walt in his yard, but then some other old guy just sitting in an armchair surrounded by books and magazines, like, the floor just covered.
Yeah, that's a great image. Yeah, it seems like at any moment, if there were an earthquake, something, it could be a problem. But yeah, that's a great image.
Terry Warpinski, who is a professor at the U of O, she went to Israel and Palestine and took pictures of the borders.
Yeah, her larger project was featured in Exposure magazine a few months ago. It's the whole project encompasses, you know, includes the Berlin Wall. It also includes the U.S.-Mexico border. But for the drawer, she focused just on the Israel-Palestine border. She also uses diptychs really in a really strong way. I would say her images in some ways are very quiet and they're not what you would think of perhaps of somebody photographing such a fraught border that so much violence. This is kind of looking at the everyday realities for people there and what you might see in between the violence.
There's a couple of pictures. Are they one picture or are they two? There's one of those looks like a fake town that they build just for practicing military maneuvers, you know, little boxy.
I feel like that buildings. Was a diptych.
It was, yeah. Okay. And there are, you know, empty windows and that kind of thing. It looks like a toy, really.
Yeah.
And then next to it, there's a picture of a bunch of soldiers who have got some vehicles and they seem to be in a hole, like sort of trench warfare, you know, sort of modern camo soldiers and in this desert landscape.
Yeah, it seems really bleak, but also very, again, quiet. Like, this might be training, or this might be getting ready for something.
And it's all shot in color, so it does have that immediacy.
Also, the tones have I think it might just be the landscape and the light of that part of the world, but the tones are very bleak in a way, too.
Barbara Gilson is a member of the exhibition committee, and she takes pictures of nature photography, black and white, places like Oak's Bottom and the kind of nature reserve at Reed College. What does she do that's sort of different?
I think Barb's vision is unique in that her focus on detail and texture is something that isn't always what you would see in contemporary photography. She still works with gelatin silver prints with film. A lot of people are still working with film, but there's just a very close attention to the craft of making the print, and you can tell when you look at it. And that's something you wouldn't be able to see if you saw her work online necessarily. Mm-hmm. You would note that it's a beautiful photograph, but seeing her work in person is just exquisite.
And so she's shooting on film. Do you think it's medium format?
I haven't asked her, and mm-hmm. she didn't let me know. But because of all the detail in there, I wouldn't be surprised. But sometimes you can get quite a bit of detail with 35 millimeter.
And she's printing her own stuff in the darkroom.
Yeah, these prints would be made in the darkroom. They're fiber-based prints that have silver in them, and so it's activated by light.
It feels like everything is in focus. It's kind of startling. You see these little woodland or shrubby and bushy areas, the way you see them in real life, they're incredibly complicated. The sort of patterns made by all these hundreds and thousands of branches are very random. You know, it's very far from the way we would draw or paint nature. And it's very in your face. And that feeling that everything is in focus and everything is black or white, you don't see that as much in photography as you would have maybe 40 years ago.
Yeah, there is more of a traditional technical proficiency to Barb's work. And yeah, it just makes for really beautiful prints.
So one of the things I love about these, well, just looking through photography magazines, is you get to see what real places where you'll probably never go really look like. And there's a woman called Mary Stroud, who's in Barrow, Alaska, which is the north end of Alaska, very cold. And she just seems to have wandered around her neighborhood in winter taking pictures of what's out there. And it's just extraordinary little wooden, they're not even houses, they're like sheds, some of them. Some of them are lived in, you know, the glass is there, the curtains are on. Some of them are just abandoned. There's one of a little building with a car outside, and the car is not just half covered in snow, it's full of snow, like the snow all on the inside. And there's another one where it's so cold, there's a sort of oval of frost on the side of this building, you know, where the wood is coldest. It's incredibly bleak, but then there are these pink tones that you must get at dawn or dusk that change everything. How do you find this woman, Mary Stroud?
We reach out to, you know, our network. She has been in our drawers before. So initially, I'm not sure how she found out about them, but she has been part of Blue Skies community, even from Alaska, for quite a while. Our network is pretty large, actually, nationally and internationally. So we actually have two people from Alaska this year in the drawers. So that's pretty exciting. And both of them are presenting us with imagery from a place that maybe some of us don't get to very often or at all.
So if you're a photographer and you sort of build a reputation with a gallery like Blue Sky, you've got a chance of being a repeat exhibit. Your work can come again and again.
Yeah, and I think especially with the drawers, I mean, the jurors change every year, so there's no guarantee that, you know, they would have the same affinity for your work as the previous jurors. But because you've done it before, you know the ropes, you know what might be appropriate to submit, you know how it works in the process, and it's just an easier thing for you to do. So mm-hmm. once you've done it once, it's easier to submit again.
Yeah.
90% of success is showing up, right? So mm-hmm. you have to apply.
You build your network in one area and you stick with what works. And these jurors, Shane from Lightwork and Prudence, who lives here, do you give them any instructions or?
Yeah, we do. We tell them we want to have a wide range of photography practices. We are interested in people from not just Oregon. I mean, we happen to have quite a lot of submissions that come from Oregon or Portland, but we would like to represent more of the states and also British Columbia that are included in our definition of Pacific Northwest. You know, beyond that, it's a ranking system, and then we kind of see the results from there. And, you know, sometimes jurors are not, they're two different people, so they're going to have two different tastes, and sometimes that's why we get such a great variety of work, mm-hmm. because we've got, that's why we like to have two people.
But you don't say we hate digital or we love portraiture.
Oh no, quite the opposite.
There are no rules in that sense.
No, we would like to have anything that you could consider photography. We would like to at least have a chance to get mm-hmm. into the drawers. Yes.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week is Zemi Barr. She's the exhibition manager at Blue Sky Gallery, and she's here talking about the 2015 Pacific Northwest Photography Viewing Draws. And that show is on right now. You go in, and all the work is in drawers. You sort of open the drawer. There are 10 pictures by each photographer. And how many photographers are there?
We have 62 this year. Mm-hmm. Primarily, many of them are from Portland and Oregon, but we do have people from Alaska, British Columbia, one person from Montana, and one person from Idaho.
So you would need a good couple of hours to kind of go through them, right?
Oh, definitely.
If you were just walking in off the street, it's a bit of a commitment.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people don't know it's there, or they're thinking that this is our collection that we house, so they're a little reticent to open them up and take a look. So we really encourage people to open the drawers, handle the prints. All the artists know that their work's going to be looked at that way. So
they're all on matting, but with a transparent protection, are they, you mostly?
For the most part. Some artists are very adamant that they feel photography is meant to be handled, to be looked at, so they feel like a plastic sheet is a barrier to that, but other people are happy to put that on mm-hmm. because I think it does make people feel more comfortable handling the prints.
Right, and they're not just traditional photography. There's one is you open it up and there's a wooden box and there's crocheted like little cloths between each pairing of photos, and the photos are printed on aluminum with some kind of coating.
Yeah, resin coating. That is Brianna Cerizo, and she is a Portland-based photographer. Her series is called Put Me to Bed. So the photographs themselves are of intimate moments between like mother and child, of her children, you know, significant others, this intimate time when someone puts you to bed. Maybe that's your mother, father, your sibling, your significant other. So it makes sense for her work to be displayed with this crocheted cloth, as if you're putting these photographs to bed in the box.
So that's the kind of thing you'd kind of get quite involved in, you know. It takes a while to like uncover them, take them out, put them down somewhere, look at them, then you've got to put them all back. It's quite a nice experience. Non-traditional pictures. There are some contact prints, right, by Paul Bogman?
Yes, he made these prints in the darkroom, I'm assuming, by putting a piece of ice on a photosensitive piece of paper with light shining on it as it melted. Mm-hmm. So that created some abstract designs. As the water moved along the paper, it would make, from the center going out, almost kind of like really large tree rings.
Yeah, they're different darknesses, basically. And this is all without a camera, right? The ice cube is directly on photographic paper.
Right.
And the light's above the ice cube.
Yeah, so again, we are open to any photography. It doesn't have to necessarily use a camera to be considered.
Anyone who loves the Belmont goats will love these pictures by Susan Bean. She took sort of formal portraits of the goats and, you know, obviously worked them up or used the Instagram type filter and made them, you know, the background, it looks like there's a sort of patina on the background. They look like studio shots. They also look almost like paintings as well. And each goat has a kind of personality and is looking right at you. And they're square. So do you know how she made these pictures?
Yes, she used an iPhone to create those portraits, and she's been using her iPhone to make other portraits as well. I think what's really interesting about her work and her use of the iPhone is that she wants to use the iPhone because it makes her work easier. It's a new tool. It makes photography even more accessible to her. She is formally trained and she used to use medium format film. But I think that's something that we're seeing more and more with photography. There seems to be a debate about whether or not, you know, we should be using our phones to mm-hmm. make fine art photography. But I think it's great. I think we can still think of photography as a discipline, something that you train yourself or are trained in, but you can use new tools and experiment. I think that's great. And the more accessible it can be to others, the better. Mm-hmm.
it seems like the debate is always, well, you can use these cheap tools as long as you've been to art school and have, or photographic school and have the training in darkroom and medium format. You know, what's the feeling when someone comes off the street and they're like 17, they've never done any of that, and they take a good picture with their phone?
I mean, I think, yeah, sometimes, especially for people who have been formally trained, that feels a little disheartening in a way. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because you can always hone your skills. And a lot of photographers are self-taught, many who are great. Mm-hmm. That we revere. So I think it's the world that's just changing, and we have new technology and we should take advantage of it.
Now, obviously the photography world has never been as snooty and hidebound as the world of painting and sculpture. Do you think the world of photography is changing now in its attitude?
I think it has to, but definitely yes. I mean, Blue Sky is changing. We, in January, showed work by a photographer, Dima Gavrish. He has spent a lot of time in Afghanistan covering the war there. Some of his work is made with traditional cameras, but he likes to re-photograph work. He uses his iPhone, and he, like Susan, who has mentioned that the technology is secondary, the image is what's most important. It's still interesting to people who are looking at the image, like, oh, how did that get made? You know, and I think it's good to talk about materials and tools, but always recognize that the image is foremost.
What does re-photograph mean?
He used to work for the Associated Press, so many of the images that he took don't belong to him. So he re-photographed with his own, he photographed the image that he had already, a printed image that he had made, and photographed it to make it his again.
Oh, okay.
So there's ways of getting around that.
Some of the most startling images are these bright colors in Melanie Flood's work. She was in a New Space show, right, called Radical Color. And here she's sort of gone, these pictures are all about like hitting you in the face with color, I feel. They really stand out. One of them is like a little inflatable Air India airplane. This is bright orange. There are pictures of cookies, you know, decorated cookies. There's a piece of card which is pink, and then someone's got a hole punch and they've cut a mountain of little holes, little circles underneath it, but they're all, you know, different colors. What is she getting at with that?
Melanie's work is great. It's probably some of our more conceptual work that's in the drawers. She's thinking about failure. She's thinking about self-portraiture and how we imagine ourselves and present ourselves to others. It's a narrative that's not easily grasped, but I think that's what makes it most interesting. It's really imaginative and inventive, and thinking about, in some ways, I think childhood and those experiments and how experiments of inventing ourselves and thinking about how we become who we are.
Do you call it a narrative in a loose sense?
Yeah, very loose, very
right.
Not linear.
You're not saying the 10 pictures have a narrative.
No, I think they're just telling a story very loosely.
There is some fairly classic sort of documentary photography, or I don't know, travel photography, would you call it? What's the difference? By Carol Isaac. She looks at different religions. So she went to Turkey, and there's pictures of whirling dervishes, these guys in white spinning around. She went to Ethiopia, where you have people, they look like they're praying at a wall, and then there's a guy selling religious icons and pictures off a tarp next to them, just a guy in a blue hoodie with jeans, slightly, you know, like you'd see all over Africa or Europe. What do you think her mission is when she travels?
Well, she's very interested in looking at different religions and how people engage with their religions. You know, in this case, she's putting together people who are Muslim and people who are Christian and how they pray, particularly. And also she's looking at the architecture of the two spaces, the light in each space. She's interested in gender in both communities. For a long time, this has been Carol's focus. She's been in our drawers before doing work in other countries. She travels quite a bit. Unlike a lot of travel photography, this is very focused. If she's looking for something, and they're not something that you would see on your vacation photos. Mm-hmm. Some of the images, especially of the mosques that she took in this series, are, the use of light and composition is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. There are mosques where there's just two guys praying, and there's shadow, a light on the floor coming coming in through the window in very interesting patterns. And then there's mosques full of guys praying, so they obviously let her in, right? They didn't have a problem with a woman being inside a mosque.
Yeah, I think that's great that she was able to capture those images.
There's another one of a church, and there's a big mural of George slaying the dragon on the outside of this church, which is pretty amazing. There's some more classic black and white photography from Andrew Stanbridge. And he went to Myanmar and he just sort of hung around a train station, as far as I can tell. What do we see there? Pictures of goods yards, and there's a woman sitting on the rails with a dog.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite image. Her expression is really interesting because it looks like she's about to say something to him. And there's a dog also in the frame with her. And it looks like she's sitting almost on the tracks, and you just wonder, you know, is there going to be a train coming? But yeah, the images in this series by Andrew are really raw. And it seems like, you know, he just spent an afternoon there and photographed just some of the interesting things that he saw. And it's definitely not a scene that we're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're used to seeing all these as moving images, you know, be something on the news about Myanmar, and then you don't really see very much. Everything kind of races by in a blur. They have their own type of images they focus on. And then to be just in a train station looking around at these boxes of whatever they are, bottles of pop or garbage and things like that. You just stay with the image for so long and absorb it. It's kind of a reminder of, you know, why photography is powerful.
Right, because there isn't that motion of the train like you're talking about, and it's not even about the trains, really. It's mm-hmm. about the people who are there for some reason, or the goods that are there for some reason. There's an image of a pile of boxes that look like they're ready to go somewhere. The lettering on them, it lets you know that this is not a U.S. train station. These mm-hmm. are not U.S.-made goods. It's a glimpse into another world, and that's something that the drawers can provide. In addition to showing us our world that we live in Portland, a lot of people photograph Portland, but photographs like Andrew's allow us to see something we might not have seen before. Mm-hmm.
What do you see a lot of when people take pictures of Portland? What do you see there has become a visual cliche?
I mean, people are very interested in, I wouldn't say it's a cliche because I think there's always ways to do it that are done well. But I think because we live in such a forested area, the tree fascination, and I'm one of those people, I'm fascinated by trees. But, you know, we tend to get a lot of landscape photos, even, you know, urban landscape, about trees that are in the urban landscape. Mm-hmm. But, you know, another thing that's, I think this is prevalent in all around, not just Portland, but the idea of ruin porn. So like buildings that are decrepit and falling apart and isn't this beautiful, but also, you know, we should save this building. Those photographs have a place, and they can be very beautiful or very, they tug at your heartstrings a little bit, but I think we're oversaturated in that realm.
I'm sure people take pictures of other people's dogs. Do they take pictures of each other, like strangers, or is there still a barrier to like going up to someone and just taking their picture?
No, I think there are a lot of street photographers actually in Portland. We have a few on our exhibition committee, a few people who would consider themselves street photographers. So I don't think that's gone out of style. I think with Instagram, there's more of a tendency to take photographs of things that you find funny or strange rather than, you know, portraits of people on the street. Although, you know, we've got that photo blog, People of New York, that's very popular. So people are doing more of that. I think there's a People of Portland.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guest this week was Zeni Barr. She's the exhibitions manager at Blue Sky Gallery, the Oregon Center for the Photographic Arts. The show she was talking about is the 2015 Pacific Northwest Photography Viewing Draws. And the gallery is at 122 Northwest 8th Avenue in Old Town. Thanks so much for coming into KBOO, Zeni.
Oh, thank you, Joseph.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, happening Tuesday the 21st from 5:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Portland, and Sunday the 26th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the North Portland Library. The Portland Renters Assembly is a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right. There'll be a chance for individuals to tell their stories about skyrocketing rents, no-cause evictions, dubious fees, and other kinds of exploitation carried out in the name of rent. There'll be childcare, snacks, and a chance to get connected to resources for moving forward together. For more information about the Portland Renters Assembly, go to Community Events.
Portland school board elections are May 19th. What's your question?
I'm Pamela Cruz, and my husband Vernon and I have 6 children, and all of them have come through Portland Public Schools. And so some of my questions would be, what is the school district going to do about transfer students wanting to go to a different high school than their neighborhood high schools?
Tune in to KBOO April 27th through 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
The noon headlines for KBOO Radio for April 21st, 2015. It has been just 2 months since Kate Brown drew on the mantle of governor of the state of Oregon. In her first State of the State address, she expressed optimism for the future of the state. Governor Brown has already shown a remarkable level of energy and a willingness to address any and all challenges that are rightfully the province of the governor. She has already signed 32 bills into law. The new governor has also declared 5